Mergers and acquisitions. They're an ongoing feature of corporate America. When mergers and acquisitions occur among federal contractors, sometimes the government sits up and takes notice. A few M&A deals have taken place recently, and among the contractors, joining me with some examples and what they mean, Jonathan Aberman, founder of the venture capital firm Amplifier Ventures. Jonathan, good morning.
Morning, Tom. I'm happy to see you on such a balmy summer day. I'm on my way to the beach, but I just thought I'd stop by.
Well, make us all feel jealous.
Speaking of
temperatures, give us the temperature of mergers and acquisitions right now in the federal market.
Well, the temperature and merger market here in town is definitely heating up. I will tell you, talking with practitioners, for example, Kipson DeSanto, some good friends of mine, they do a lot of M&A banking here in town. I talked with them about this on Friday and yesterday. What they're seeing, other friends of mine are seeing, is that a little bit of the coast is clear siren going off. You know, for a while, the sequestration, lack of budget and so forth really create a lot of uncertainty. And when there's uncertainty, people don't do strategic things. And with the budget deal and a sense of greater stability, you're now seeing a pickup of M&A activity. There have been some significant deals in the last quarter that show that the government contract community is, in fact, moving in a strategic direction.
What you say seems a little counterintuitive. I would think that when government is flat or there's sequestration, that type of thing, more companies would merge to try to pool their resources and cut costs.
Well, if you look at merger and acquisition as two drowning men trying to fight over life preserver, maybe. But the reality is that the really good deals happen at a time when there's strategic reasons to do so, and also when there's the possibility of finding a good way to agree on price. The difficult thing about a situation like what we had with sequestration and all the uncertainty is that it was unclear which contracts were going to get renewed and which companies were going to continue to grow. That is a terrible market to be a buyer because you don't know what you're buying, but it's a worse market to be a seller because if you can't provide certainty as to what your revenue prospects are, you're not going to get a good price. So what ends up happening in a time of uncertainty is the only deals that get done are distressed deals. And if you are a buyer, you don't want to buy distressed assets. And if you need to sell, I can tell you, over years of experience doing lots of M&A, the last thing you ever want is to sell your company. What you want is for your company to be bought. And what I mean by that is you want to be running your business, killing it every quarter, having great numbers, getting new customers, and have somebody come and ask to buy you. That's when you get the best price for your shareholders. You never sell a business. You get it bought.
It's like trying to get a new job as an individual. It's much better when you're working and doing things than when you're out of work.
Which is basically why I'm here on the radio today, for example.
And the offers just send them in.
No, you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, it's always the same. If you have something desirable, whether it's a skill or a technology product or a series of contracts, whatever it is in life, you're always going to be much more fully valued when you can say no. There's no doubt about that. What we're seeing now is that there's enough certainty and enough possibilities in the government contracting technology market to touch off activity.
All right. So when companies are thinking about this in the federal market, does the common customer ever come into the equation? Do they worry about how contracting officers or program people that have contracts with them will think about that merger and acquisition?
I think that you obviously have to be concerned about how your transaction is going to affect how you're perceived by your customer. That's true whether you're in the inside world of government contracting, the outside world of commercial. You're always doing deals to ultimately either grow market share or to enter a new market. That's why companies acquire. Otherwise, you're better off just growing organically. You acquire as a way to expand your resource base. So the reality here is that people understand that right now with federal technology, we are dealing with a flattening or a shrinking pie. I don't think that anything has happened over the last year to lead people to think that with the exception of R&D and advanced technology, that we don't have anything other than a pie that is shrinking. So what you're seeing is a couple of things. You're seeing M&A deals like Task and Engility, which was basically a merger to try to reach efficiencies. You know, two contractors merging to make a larger business to capture some efficiencies.
But was that also a merger or did one buy the other?
It was structured as a merger.
So this was Task and Engility?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And that's an example of just companies basically merging to maintain or grow market share within a remaining or an existing service type of model. But then what you're also seeing is you're now seeing companies, government contractors, buying blended technology solution companies. So, for example, you saw CACI buy 6-3, which was an intelligence technology and services business, and that touched off a number of other similar deals. Raytheon bought Blackbird, Great company. I know the founders there very well, Intelligence Services, and Lockheed bought Zeta.
So Raytheon, a traditional manufacturer, buying a services company.
Well, but again, a services product company. The trend here that's really interesting is what we're seeing now is the government contract community is reacting to this world a number of different ways. One way is, let's buy technology companies that have a solution set, a product and services, that we can bolt in to our existing company and grow into a new market. So you see deals like that. You also see deals where it's like, let's get more market share within the service market they're in. And then you see companies starting to try to take their service model and diversify away from the government per se. So, for example, what ICF did with Olson, you know, where ICF's got a really large business now doing what I would think of as very much a consumer enterprise business around internet marketing. And very, very interesting. You know, you look at ICF, it's migrating further and further away from being just a government services business. I think it's a good strategy.
We're speaking with Jonathan Aberman. He is the founder of the venture capital firm Amplifier Ventures in Northern Virginia. What about the cybersecurity vertical?
Well,
what's going on there?
Cyber is very hot and has been for a while. And all you have to do is pick up the newspaper and read about 76 million profiles being taken from J.P. Morgan or hearing that Google went to the NSA because China's been hacking into its servers for a long time. And it's a continued trend. You see our regional governments all focusing very much on cyber. There have been and there will continue to be cyber-related acquisitions. You know, FireEye bought NPulse, which is network forensics, for example. BIA bought SilverSky, which is cloud security. You will continue to see those type of transactions because there's a lot of energy that's going into that sector because a lot of government dollars, particularly in R&D, are going into that sector. The interesting thing for me, Tom, is it's really important for us in the region to separate and differentiate between what's a trendy bubble vis-a-vis what could be a long-term trend. And I think that there are people that run at cyber because they think, well, that's where the money is, and don't necessarily have either the technology team or the insights to be particularly good at it. So the challenge right now is going to be to separate the companies that really get it, say a FireEye or an Invincia or other startups here that have grown in town and elsewhere, vis-a-vis folks that talk cyber but don't really understand it. It is a highly technical and demanding area.
And let me ask you about something you touched on, and that is diversifying into commercial and the whole R&D question, because a lot of people around town, including the Secretary of Defense, are worried about the level of research and development going on for military and maybe generally federal types of purposes.
Absolutely.
And as companies diversify into commercial, I mean, all the R&D really now is outside of the military industrial area, and it's in commercial nowadays.
Well, certainly that's what I'm working on with the Tandem NSI initiative that I've been talking with you about over the months, and that's focused very much on connecting non-traditional innovators with the federal government. What you're talking about is very important, as Secretary of Defense Hagel made a speech 2 days ago where he announced the first public manifestation of a trend I've been hearing about and talking with different officials for about a year and a half, 2 years now, which is the Pentagon now understands that in order to get the best innovations, the best advanced technologies, it needs to do a better job of interacting with people who are not currently involved in national defense technology development. Now, that's an important trend. It's a big trend. It's a trend that's going to create more and more opportunities. The part of the Pentagon budget that's not flat, that has growth in it, is R&D. But for this region, and why this is a wake-up call, is he made the speech, but where did he make it? He made it in California. We in this region have to understand that when the Pentagon and when DARPA and others think about innovation, the first place that they often think about non-traditional innovation is not Northern Virginia, suburban Maryland, it's California. And unless we do things like Tandem NSI and the other accelerators that have grown in this region, and in companies like Booz and others, we need to really be focusing on this trend. Otherwise, we might find that we are an integrator community, but that the high value add technologies that ultimately capture the big margins are developed by entrepreneurs and companies outside the region.
And it's not just a military issue. I mean, the administration sent Todd Park, who had been the chief technology officer for the administration and earlier for HHS. They moved him back to Silicon Valley to recruit.
Well, I know Todd. I mean, Todd came from the Valley to come here, but more significantly, they recruited his replacement from Google.
Yeah, and the people that are fixing all the websites at HHS, those are all from whole complex of people.
And I think that is really more a function of us not doing a good job of creating visibility and pathways for our local people to be more entrepreneurial And now more than ever, that's important because we have more software. We have more software engineers and designers than any other place in the country. We have more PhDs than any other place in the country. But we are not doing the best job we can in creating pathways for them to start 2, 3, 5, 10-person companies. You talked about M&A. The biggest difference between commercial and government contract M&A is the phenomenon of an acqui-hire. A lot of commercial businesses grow by acquiring teams of 5 to 10 people who develop an interesting product for $5, $10, $20 million, and then gets bolted into a company where this product can be distributed. We don't really do that with our government contract community. That's not the way they buy companies. And probably that is the biggest reason why Silicon Valley is perceived as a better place to be a startup entrepreneur than we are.
And just a question kind of in the weeds. The president has issued a couple of executive orders, one on contractor minimum pay. It has to be higher than the actual federal minimum wage, and also greater and pretty onerous compliance standards for labor regulations for federal contractors, because it's not something Congress will pass for everybody.
Right.
Is that an impediment to people wanting to merge into this market if they have to have the government kind of looking in on their books and so forth?
You know, I think that people will often look at that issue and see it based upon their political viewpoints. I think that the reality is that merger and acquisition activity is always going to be spurred by where the best capital deployment can occur. If the margins in the business are satisfactory to support higher pay and better labor standards, you'll merge into the business. If they're not, you won't. What I think you're going to see, Tom, more and more is the government contract community is going to be seeking high margin opportunities wherever they occur. And whether that's a product company or an ancillary service or an out-of-region deal, that's the way mergers happen, and that'll continue to be the case.
Jonathan Aberman is founder of Amplifier Ventures of Northern Virginia. Thanks so much for joining us.
As always.